Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Tennis and Bagels podcast. Today I'm here with a first time guest on the show. He's a very big fan of the WTA Tour. He tweets quite a bit about it. It's a lot of information in his account, which we're going to drop in the link in the description at the end of the episode. And his name, if you haven't figured it out yet, is Juan Ignacio. He is here and we're just going to be chatting very much exclusively about the WTA today. So how are you doing, Juan?
Hi, Andre. Thanks for the invitation. Really excited about this opportunity. So looking forward for our conversation today.
Great. So I guess I'm just going to ask you just one starter. Like, why do you prefer the WTA Tour over the ATP?
I value them equally, but I am more a consumer of WTA tennis. Although that through my time as a tennis fan has changed over years. I started more as a follower of the ATP, but in the last years, I started to appreciate more women's tennis as well.
Nice. And why do you think that is? Like, is there any reason specifically? Is it the strategy or just the players? I know it's a very competitive field, whereas the men's can kind of get boring in terms of like who's going to win the next big thing. So.
Well, first of all, I do think it's more open, and even though most people would tell you that's just inconsistency or being worse players, well, I completely disagree with that. But also, I think it's a more diverse tour in terms of personalities and playing styles, especially the former. The diversity in styles of play, it's really captivating for me. In ATP, we're seeing the supremacy of big serves. It's annoying when going to the extreme. So, especially in this part of the season in grass. So, I think it's the WTA has a lot of different narratives and stories that don't go well covered by media. Oh, so yeah. I try to make up for that a bit.
Yeah, and you do a great work, by the way, with that. It's probably one of the best accounts to follow on regarding WTA on Twitter. So yeah, this is Do you have
a reminder? I'm just a fan. I'm no journalist. I'm just a fan that likes to do this.
That's fine. Honestly, this is a fan podcast as well. I do happen to work at Tennis Canada, but I'm not a journalist. So, not all of us are just consuming all the information that is publicly available to everybody. So, yeah, this is just really cool though. Like that dedication of fans just to be showing around, even in fan accounts like yours. And yeah, this is like a bit of a reminder for everybody on Twitter that we're not journalists, so yeah, you can stop that comment.
Just chatting with your friends about sport you like.
Exactly, it's just friendly chatter. Do you have a favorite right now, a favorite player?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that I really like Iga Świątek.
Nice.
And well, a bunch more more lower ranked, to be honest. But yeah.
Nice. And speaking of Iga Świątek, because I guess even though it's the grass season now, we can jump back a little bit to Roland Garros and like whatever she did in there. Did you get to watch a lot of the tournament? Of
although I was in the middle of my midterms in my career, yes, I still made time for that, and I loved the tournament. It had so many narratives in both draws. It was one of the best Grand Slam tournaments in recent years, in my opinion.
It was
super entertaining to follow.
Yeah, I do. I tend to agree. I would say even like the women's tournament was far better than the men's this one time around. Just because of just the sheer tennis quality itself. Like, I feel like the semifinals that we've got were really good, and the final was obviously like a bit of a surprise final, but Muchova did such a great job. And you know, it was just competitive to the end. So yeah, what are your thoughts on that, on those last leg of the tournament, really, and the finalists?
Well, the last three matches in the semis and final were probably one of the best later rounds of a slam in recent years. All three matches were incredible. The comeback that Muchova makes in the semis against Sabalenka, saving a match point, and reaching her first big final, because she hadn't even made a final in a WTA 1000 before. But finally living up to the hype, to the talks that always have been around her. And also we had the fight for the number one spot, that it was decided until the last Thursday, practically. So that was also a storyline that was really entertaining to follow throughout the 2 weeks. We had also Haddad Maia, incredible, making story for Brazil, reaching her first Grand Slam, second week, quarterfinals, and semifinal.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's a.
There was a lot going on.
Exactly, especially as a Brazilian, like just seeing how she competed against Świątek, and that match was really inspiring. I think was just really good. And honestly, like the first time since Gustavo Kuerten that somebody did something that impressive, I guess, on a Grand Slam level. And obviously in singles.
You can see the... Yes.
In singles, because
you can see the effect that her run had in Brazil. Because you go check any social media account from any journalist or tournament or anything, and there's immediately like thousand replies from Brazilians cheering for Bia.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's really funny, like whenever there's a Brazilian doing something, the Brazilians just flood the commentaries. Like it's just really kind of a hilarious thing to do. Like it's a given every time. If you're Brazilian, you know, or even if you just had any sort of interactions, you know that as soon as somebody speaks about Brazil, it's going to show up in the comments, no doubt. So it's just always really fun to see that just the love that Bia has gotten. And in terms of, I guess, tennis, like what do you... Because Świątek has struggled a little bit this year in terms of, obviously, after 2022, it was very unlikely that she was going to reproduce the amount of success that she had. She's still number one, and she's still won the Grand Slam, her fourth one, third at RG. So, but why do you think that... I mean, we can talk about like how Sabalenka has become better, and also Rybakina, and they have been able to explore a little bit more of like the forehand, and then rush Świątek a little bit more. But do you think that we sort of have like this little big three going on, or you think that Świątek is still pretty much in the lead in terms of how much better she is?
I don't really like extrapolating this narrative from the ATP to the WTA. We're already years far behind to be able to call any group of players anything remotely close to a big three.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, that they've been all three of them have been far above the rest of the tour, reaching the later stages, finals, titles of basically every big tournament this year. Pretty sure they've been in the final of everyone, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So it's obviously that for what these 6 months have been so far, yeah, you can make the point that we have a big three.
Mm-hmm.
But still, let's see how this develops into the next seasons, because as we saw, Iga had a great 2022. Sabalenka was struggling, but still there in the top 10. Rybakina was making her her first big moves.
It did.
And now they took the next step. So let's see what next year's bring, and then we can see if this gets consolidated at the top.
Yeah.
But of course, this is really, really great for the tour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yes, because Świątek has a very like even like Nadal like style of game. Obviously, again, don't want to draw too many comparisons because she's her own player, even. But she herself admitted to, you know, mirror some of the way that she plays over Nadal's. So having somebody like Kumukova who had the style that she was playing, like so much slicing and just like the bigger serve and just coming to the net a lot, like how did you find a contrast like in that final? I thought it was just like really fun to watch, and I think it really forced Świątek to find different solutions, because so far she had been playing a lot of players who were big hitters and just like big servers, and you know the baseline game has been established like really strong in the WTA. So I feel like for her to face somebody like that, I think it was probably like the best win of her for her this year in terms of like maybe confidence and value in that regard. And obviously it was a final, but so what did you make of that?
I'd say it was one of her most memorable wins ever. Obviously because of the struggle it represents at the end, being twice a breakdown in the third, break point down while serving for all. But as you say, it was a really, really interesting how to follow the contrast of styles, how in the star move was really trying to mix up things with a lot of drop shots coming forward to the net, annoying Iga with the slices, mixing up the pace.
Yeah.
And while Iga was standing in the baseline, making angles, hitting stronger to the lines.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really entertaining to see that contrast and going for almost 3 hours.
Yeah. I think that a lot of that match came down to experience, like honestly, in terms of like how Świątek has been there before. Like, I don't know, like I feel like because Mukova was able to beat twice a break up, obviously, like Świątek is no, it's not easy job to close. But I mean, I do imagine that being in that place really just was the fuel for Świątek to close it out. Especially because she hasn't really been doing super well in terms of three set matches this year. She was either winning a lot in two or just losing also in two. So I think it kind of was really good to see that battle as well, and I think that the experience that she had finally proved to come to fruition in terms of like winning in that top three setter, as you said.
Yeah, what you say about experience and the nerves, with what a better representation that double faulting on match point.
Yeah,
so that's like a really unfortunate end, but kind of showed how the nerves, unfortunately, got Carolina in the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a remarkable win for Świątek, for what you say, that she hadn't really quite had this like epic comebacks.
Yeah.
She was either losing in two or winning in two.
Yeah.
But this long hour fights against players willing to go toe-to-toe with her. We hadn't really seen that, and even less in Roland Garros.
Yeah.
So that's why also the semifinal against Haddad Maya might have helped her a lot in terms to change it, that switch, that maybe not everything is going to go that easy in these courts. And Muchova knew how to do that and how well she did.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually pretty interesting that you mentioned, because like Haddad Maya, she lost the first set pretty convincingly, like 6-2, I think. So there was a big comeback and she had set point. I think that it definitely showed, like, definitely like a lot of the fighting spirit that wasn't necessarily missing in Świątek, but it was sort of like sleeping a little bit just because of the fact that she was either winning really, really handily or being kind of handily being beaten. Like when she lost to Rybakina, I think in Indian Wells, it was a very awkward match to watch because it definitely didn't look, obviously she came up with like the injury afterwards, so that is like a little bit of a silver lining in this one, but like not silver lining, but you know, some context to be made. But at the same time, it's like it's definitely part of her progress as a player to start getting a lot of those tough matches and winning them and getting out of them. So yeah, and I think that
I was really surprised. Yeah. I was really surprised about Haddad Maya in the second set, because honestly, about knowing what she had done the day before against Sorribes Tormo, I was expecting her after losing the first set, so comfortably to basically go off the court in 20 minutes and done. But she took it to a tiebreak, had a set point. That volley at 5-3, probably she won't forget it ever. But yeah, in the end, you see how Świątek was able to get that gear up when it most matter.
Yeah,
both in the semifinals and the final, which was something that we hadn't really quite seen since last year.
Yeah, true. Yeah, and I guess it kind of worked the other way around in the other semifinal, where like Sabalenka had a big implosion in that sense, and like Muchova just kind of rose to the occasion. I think it was like a 5-1 lead that Sabalenka had in the third set.
It was 5-2 match point.
Yeah, 5-2 match point, yeah. Well, that was crazy. Like, I mean, in a sense, I think it even though, yes, he was on clay, which is Iga Świątek's best surface, and Sabalenka has won her first Grand Slam on hard, and she has been showing, you know, just better prowess on the faster surfaces, even though she has made the final in Stuttgart, I think, like for 3 consecutive years.
3 times.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's no stranger to clay. She plays well there. She knows she can win. But it's interesting to see that, like, I mean, I guess if you look in that moment, kind of makes it clear, at least like in terms of for now, like Świątek still has a bit of an edge over Sabalenka over as a, and in terms of number one, not necessarily in terms of their rivalry. I think it's kind of a pretty balanced, but I guess in terms of the whole tour, I think that Świątek kind of can prove in that regard. And obviously, like, Muchova did a fantastic job coming back, but yeah.
It would have been really interesting to see them play again on the clay, because we had seen them face each other in the final of both Stuttgart and Madrid with one win for each other. So both playing for both the title and the number one spot would have been an amazing story. But yeah, Muchova had something to say about it, and remarkable how she turned things around from a 3-game deficit, match point down. All props to her. Yeah. Sabalenka, of course, it has been a problem in these later stages, in the semifinals of Grand Slams. She had her breakthrough at the Australian Open, so of course she still knows that she can do it, so that's the good part for her.
Yeah.
And now that we're gonna go to analyze the grass.
Yeah.
Well, now it's of course when where her biggest chance is going to be.
Yeah. As really my next point as well. Like as we transition to grass, there's just so many questions though, because there isn't really a single player that has established themselves as the big favorite on grass. There is a few who have had good results. We know that Sabalenka has reached the semifinals. Rybakina has won last year, and Jabeur also reached the final. But even that's, I think there's like a both tours is going on, in the sense where no one younger player, like this generation player, has really stepped up to be the one who is always the favorite to win, or just the one that you're always looking at and seeing, this guy is the one that I think is going to make it. Even though I personally would say that is Rybakina, I don't really think I give her that much of an edge, like over the field. Though I do feel like Świątek kind of drops to maybe a third favorite, fourth even.
Yeah, well, the last years have been really, really weird with the grass, because in 2020 we straight up didn't have any tournaments on the surface.
Yeah.
In 2021, Roland Garros chose to put back the tournament 1 week, so we had only 2 weeks in grass.
Yep.
And last year with the ban of Russians and Belarusians, we also lost all of them at Wimbledon. So it's 4 years already since we don't have a normal,
like a proper grass season. Yeah, exactly.
So still, I think there's a lot of players on the WTA that do feel really comfortable on it.
Yeah.
Just checking quickly the rankings, there's Sabalenka, of course, Rybakina, Muchova, that has made.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Multiple quarterfinals, yep. In Grand Slam, Kvitova, Goff also, Ostapenko, Kudermetova, Jaber, Garcia. So there are a lot of players that know how to play on the surface. Now the question is, are they going to be able to take that level throughout 2 entire weeks?
Yeah. And it's always the question a little bit, like in terms of that, like in a few question marks as well. I think you really hit the nail on the head there. Like that grass season already shortened as it is, like it just 3 weeks and then Wimbledon, and then it's pretty much over. All these players, those new people, especially on the WTA, which has seen just like a remarkable changing of the guard, of changing of the generations, like Serena Williams retiring, and then Ash Barty was up there, and like she played really well to win it. But yeah, like it's, I think the reason exactly why no players really stand out is really just because of that, right? Because there isn't a lot of data to work on in terms of like players that play on Wimbledon in a proper situation with all the players who are good playing there. Like obviously Sabalenka wasn't able to play Wimbledon last year. So this year is definitely going to be our first time almost ever seeing this new crop of good players, this new top 10 actually coming into Wimbledon. Okay, now we're going to be able to see who's the one who's bringing it to the next level. I think that's
you really brought the nail on the head here. Like, I feel like this Wimble is just going to be our data collecting season for, like, who is going to be doing well for the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's a great way to face it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of players that I wouldn't be surprised if you tell me that they end up winning it, but it's tough to choose which one it could be. Just to put one example, Kvitova that has only won six titles of grass, won last week in Berlin, last year won Eastbourne, that it's a two-time champion. And then you remember that in the last seven editions of Wimbledon, only one time managed to make the second week.
Yeah.
And that's like the kind of questions that you make about these players.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to be able to go that step forward this year?
Yeah. I would personally, it's just out of a matter of taste. I would really love Jabeur to take a Grand Slam title. I think she has been playing so well, like, over the past couple of years. It was really brutal for her to lose last year against Rybakina. Got to another final in the US Open, lost again to Świątek. So I feel like, personally, I would really like to see Jabeur, like, lifting a Grand Slam title. I think it would be really deserved. So I would really be happy about this. But, yeah, I feel like it's interesting to see, like, what's going to happen. My guess, if obviously no draws have come out yet, so this is a shot in the dark, essentially, but I wouldn't be surprised if Rybakina wins it again this year. I think she is one of the biggest players right now on fast courts, so
with Grishiris, it's tough to call because she's been struggling with this viral illness since Roland Garros had to pull out of this one this week. And in Berlin, lost in the second round to Vekic.
But
of course, if she's in form, of course she's a top two candidate with Sabalenka. I think that's undeniable.
Yeah, true.
So a lot goes in sense of, is she going to be healthy enough to compete in this tournament? But yes, she's a top two candidate here.
Yeah.
Then goes Sabalenka that also lost early in Berlin, lost to Kudermetova.
Mm-hmm.
And with you also from Eastbourne this week, so she's gonna only have played two matches on grass before Wimbledon. I consider that last year didn't play, also played only a bunch of warm ups.
Yeah.
So she hasn't also
just had the opportunity, really, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we see the first week for both of them will be really important. If they can win those first three matches in an easy, quick way, and enter the second week with the confidence and rhythm with their game, I can't call it at the moment, but
of course
they are the two main favorites.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and what do you think is the key for Świątek to play well at Wimbledon? Like, what do you think, or really on grass in general? Like, do you think that there's something in her game, maybe her serve or net game?
I'd say main point, it's basically confidence.
Okay.
Of course, their grass makes some of her best technical assets to not be as useful on grass.
Yeah.
Like her forehand on defense becomes a liability because she has less time to hit her shot with her Western grip.
Yeah.
She can slide on the backhand to defend.
Mm.
Her serve is not as dominant as the ones from these other players. But we've seen that she can actually play on the surface. If she makes some technical adjustments, she's now playing in Germany a 250 tournament, won already her first round. And there were a lot of good signs there that with her coach, she's been working on it. She's trying to implement more slices, coming more often to the net, great in passing shots. Her serve really worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, she's upset prone in the first week of Wimbledon if someone on fire and bashing the ball.
Like just on red lining, just hitting the lines and everything. Yeah.
Exactly. So, but I don't think it's ridiculous to think she can absolutely make the fourth round.
Oh yeah,
and maybe go one step forward and reach the quarterfinals. Which would be, in my opinion, the quarterfinals already a success for tournament.
Yeah, to be fair, that's exactly what I was thinking. I think that if she makes a quarterfinal, it's obviously the confidence boost, and coming into a quarterfinal, even if it's nothing to lose, really, having just won Roland Garros. I think she's guaranteed to be number one for a minute still. Like, she's not going to drop it anytime soon, but I could be wrong. Because, nope. Could she drop a number one after Wimbledon?
Yeah, so you can check it on my account. I have it posted, but yes, Sabalenka can become number one in Wimbledon, but she needs to reach at least the final.
Oh, right.
And then depends on how Świątek does,
yeah,
of course, but Sabalenka can become number one after.
Could she become number one if Świątek reaches the quarterfinals?
Yeah, you'll have to let me check it, but
yeah. Well, there's a great point for the listeners. Go check his account and see the scenarios for number one post Wimbledon. But yeah, like in that regard, I feel like, yeah, it's, well, there's something to lose for her now, even as the quarterfinal, but I think reaching the quarterfinals, I do think that it's a little bit of, as you said, like it's a success for her. I think this is an opportunity for her to just play with a lot less pressure than she would have normally. Like she did in Roland Garros, she played with so much pressure there. So I think it could be a really good chance for her to reach even the semis, honestly. Like, I think it's a big step, but I would agree as well that the quarterfinal is definitely... should be at least like a big goal for her, like at least this time around in Wimbledon. So yeah, let's see how she does that. I think she has been using even this slice on the back end specifically a little bit more, not quite as much as I think, as you said, you would have been more useful for her, but I think it's been coming. Like, I think there's something that she might have been trying to work in her game before the grass season, even, so that she wouldn't get here and just add something in her game within 3 weeks of like playing the third major of the year. So yeah,
it's of course, as you say, a way more different situation than Roland Garros, because there it was the pressure of defending a slam for the first time.
Yep.
She hadn't won a big title until then this season, so there were a lot of things going on in her mind, and now I don't think she's worrying at She's worried
yep.
about the number one ranking in Wimbledon at all.
Mm-hmm.
If she happens to lose it, well, she'll work to get it back. Her goal is just to gain experience and polish her game on the grass.
Yeah. And what do you see Mukova doing in this tournament? She's now going to be seeded. It's been a while that she was having just top draws because of being seeded, and she got Maria Sakkari twice in a row at Roland Garros in the first round. She's, even though she's won both times, it's not necessarily the draw you want to have, but how do you see her making it big again, like now that she has a Grand Slam final under her belt? She stays healthy, of course. It's been an issue for her in the past few years. So,
if I remember correctly, she made the quarterfinals both in 2019 and 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's it's a place she knows how to where to perform well. Now she hasn't played since the Roland Garros final.
Yeah,
she hasn't played any matches on grass yet, so we'll have to see how she adjusts in those first days of the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But she definitely has a shot to go to reach the semifinals.
The semi, yeah.
Yeah, I think she's perfectly capable of doing that. Now she's gonna be seeded. She's gonna be seeded 16.
Yeah.
In Wimbledon.
Yeah.
So imagine a fourth round match against Sabalenka or Rybakina. That's totally possible.
Yeah.
Imagine that. So
it's not worrying as
well. Of course. Yeah. So the draw will have something to say about her path, but I do think she's absolutely capable of reaching the semifinals, rebound final here again.
Yeah. I know you don't wanna say, like, you don't wanna look too forward into the future, but do you think you have somebody that you would say for now you would think is the favorite to go all the way? Or are you just really not sure at all right now?
No, if I have to go with somebody, I'll choose Sabalenka.
Mm. Yes.
For both her experience, she's already made the semis. She's had an amazing year. We'll see if that semifinal loss in Roland Garros and this early exit in Berlin affects her going into Wimbledon, but I don't think so personally.
Mm-hmm.
I think she'll bounce back from that and learn her lesson from that. And she had her breakthrough. She had her Grand Slam breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago here. Remember when people said that she could never reach the fourth round, the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
She was not getting the slam results people were expecting from her, and then that Wimbledon happened and she reached the semis.
Yeah.
was one set away from the final. So with all that information and knowing that Rybakina mm-hmm. is battling with this illness I pick Sabalenka as the number one favorite.
When the draw comes out, we're gonna ask your opinion on Twitter. And when I record the episode, I'm just going to say it all out. What does Juan Ignacio says about who is the favorite with the draw finally laid out in front of our eyes? Because that's definitely, as you said, it can dictate a lot of like what can be in like holding a player back from being the favorite or not. But yeah. And I think that just to finalize, like a final thought that I had is because you mentioned in the beginning that like a lot of the ATP and the men's tour has been heavily dominated by a serve plus one, essentially like a big forehand. And just you even think of like Alcaraz, who even though he's like a really great mover, he still really does excel on a plus one shot, like has a big serve and a big forehand. So and you said like specifically on grass, this is a type of play that it's very favorable. Normally it doesn't really get a player into like the final or even winning, but mostly because of big three gatekeeping. But on the WTA side, like on the women's, what do you think is really the key to playing well on grass, given that those advantages are a little bit more subdued, especially now that Serena Williams has retired?
Well, it's a weird... We have a weird sample of winners and finalists in the recent years. There's no like one archetype of player. If you look back, you have Rybakina that won last year. One of, if not the best serve on tour right now.
Yeah.
Jabeur, it's nothing like that. She has more variety. She's like a young bowler almost. in 2019, Simona Halep won.
Yeah,
you can say her serve, her serve plus one is her, is her her best combo.
Mm-hmm.
There was Serena, Kerber,
yeah,
Muguruza. So there's really a big contrast of styles on WTA on how to perform well on the surface.
Yeah,
there's no like one recipe. So that also is something that makes the surface in its own way attractive for me to watch.
Yeah, it's really looking forward. Like if anything, given everything that's been happening ATP WTA wise, the ATP has definitely become a really great spot to, you know, just look forward and just get excited. Not that the ATP isn't, but it's just in a very much different way. The ATP, we've been looking a lot at Djokovic and whether he's going to be breaking more records or not. And the WTA is really just, I feel like it's really just raw enjoyment of tennis, like at the moment. Like, and obviously, like, there's great players in the making. So I think that's a really great appeal of what's the future going to look like. And we are seeing like shades of like, what's it going to be in the future. So yeah, like it's definitely interesting just to notice. It's a really great observation, actually, like that Wimbledon champions have been essentially just hard to predict due to just really the lack of a single specific strategy or archetype, really,
okay,
as you put it, like to really make it there. So, yeah, that's really interesting.
As you were mentioning before, that's also the attractiveness that this tournament is gonna have, that it's basically a completely new generation of players that are going to, for the first time, have their spotlight in
mm-hmm.
Now the generation of the 80s, almost 90s, the start of the 90s, they're not gone, but they're not the ones dominating now.
Yeah,
we've already been past that stage on tour, so there's a lot of new storylines, coming players pushing to get their place at the top of the women's game. So that's also something that brings appeal to me.
Mm, yeah. All right. So great talk. I'm really excited to have you over again for more talks. We'll see, like, when Wimbledon is over, we can do like a full review of it again if you're interested, but we'll see. So can you just share with the listeners, like, what's your Twitter handle so that they can go and follow?
It's Juan Ignacio. How do you say it in English? I don't know. It's like the line.
Oh yeah, it's underscore, I think. Yeah,
well, Juan Ignacio underscore AC. That's how you're going to find it.
Nice. So, yeah, it's going to be in the description of this episode. So if you can go and just click that the link in there, you're going to find him. And you can check again the scenarios for Wimbledon that he's made, and a lot more other like cool WTA content that he just makes for free, because as a dedicated fan to the game. So, yeah, so it was really a great talk. You can also follow Tennis and Bagels at Tennis and Bagels. Varsh at Varsh BTK and Tennis Nation. Well, Owen at Tennis Nation and myself as Rollenberg Andre. And yeah, thanks again, Juan. We'll be sure to have you over again, and maybe it's going to be a bigger conversation with the other guys on it. So yeah, thanks very much.
Well, thanks a lot for the invitation. Finally, it worked out.
Yes, for sure. All right, thanks so much. See ya.
Hmm. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.